Recording has started.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to the IGO-INGO Access to Curative Rights Protection Mechanism Working Group call taking place on the 19th of April, 2018. On the call today, we have Susan Kawaguchi, George Kourakis, David Maher, Petter Renforth, Zach Muskovich, Jay Chapman, and Phil Corwin. We have listed apologies from Osvaldo Nuova and Paul Tattersfield. From staff, we have Mary Wong, Dennis Chang, Barry Cobb, and myself, Terry Adkins. I would like to remind all to please state your name before speaking for transcription purpose, and to please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I'll turn it back over to our co-chair, Petter Renforth. Please begin.
Thank you, and we co-chairs shall not be so active today because we have Susan Kawaguchi on the meeting. Welcome, and I leave it over to you to start with in a second, just to start with the traditional question if there's any updates of statement of interest. And yes, you have to click on view all attendees. I see no hands up there. So then I'll turn over to Susan, and thank you for your work with this and having personal meetings and then set up meetings with the possibilities to people to also call in and send email comments and for your summarized report on what people have thought about our different possible solutions. So over to you, Susan.
Thank you very much, Petter, and I appreciate that. And thank you all for joining today. You know, this I know this is it's sort of been a difficult time to figure out what the next step with this PDP was going to be. And so I'm just going to go through a little bit of background of the report, not read it to you since it's all been everybody's had that opportunity, received the report at least 3 or 4 days ago, I think. And since I'm using my notes that are on my you know, online here, I may not be able to tell if somebody's raised their hand, but let me get through a little bit of a review of this and then we can take questions. So as everyone knows, there was George filed a 3.7, an appeal concerning the Curative Rights Working Group and how it related to the consensus designation process. And in once he filed that, you know, Heather notified me and Mary did, and we all started trying to figure out exactly how to respond and what the process was to respond. And we worked through that. It took a couple months. And then decided that the next step was to allow each of the working group members who wanted to provide their input to Heather and I. And but since I'm the liaison to the PDP, I was the one that sat with you or you know, where we did a phone call and did you know, anywhere. Usually it was 10 minutes of just listening to the viewpoint of an experience of working on this PDP. Prior to that, each person received a copy of the straw man that was drafted by Heather and I, and we used that and sort of worked through that. There were 6 different options or categories that, you know, could be solutions to the problem that this PDP was addressing. So I won't go through all of this, but in the, if you, you know, we had less than 10 members respond, two of which were by email, and eight actually spoke to us, which, and I appreciate everybody's candor. I think everybody truly has, they have, may have their own opinion of what needs to be done in this PDP, but I do think they, everybody had balanced reasoning coming from their viewpoint. And so we had those discussions, and then we created a report from that and reported back to Heather, Dr. Forrest, and Mary and I and Steve Shannon had a conversation reviewing that report with Heather, and then came to the conclusion that there probably was never going to be consensus on this, on these issues. The working group early on had come to a few consensus recommendations, but the core that they were working on lately, it just seemed like there was not going to be a consensus point that we could then recommend to be policy. And since the GNSO Council is responsible for managing the policy development process, at this point, it seems that the next step would be to take that report and send it to the GNSO Council for review, and then a decision to be made. So that will help happen, on April 26th. And so there'll be a discussion there, which, as you all know, the council meetings are open for observation and listening to. So, you know, we came to several observations and conclusions. It's unlikely that continuing with the further working group deliberation at this stage in order to either reduce the number of options from six to fewer or to attempt to reach consensus on one of the current options will result in clear consensus. The number of active participants at this point is extremely low, and there's an obvious division of strongly held opinions. And none of the options currently under consideration align with the most recent GAC advice on the topic of curative protections for IGOs. Although option three includes an arbitration as a possibility, it's different in structure and process from the GAC advice. Well, it's not an objective of the PDP to accede to GAC advice. The likelihood that any consensus on the issue of IGO jurisdictional immunity will be based only on a small number of participants' views, and the fact that the recommendation on the topic will likely conflict with GAC advice means the GNSO Council and the ICANN board will each ultimately have to consider whether and how to reconcile the outcome of the GAC advice. So the last reason for bringing this to the council at this point is that the option preferred by those members opposed to an arbitration option is to refer the matter to the PDP working group, the RPM working group. That would require charter amendments, the other PDP, and charter revisions require a vote of the GNSO Council. So it will be appropriate for the working group to discuss and report sooner rather than later and to the council and possibly with the RPM working group as they're already reviewing the URS. And they plan to wrap up that work within the next few months. So, you know, once again, we took a deep look at this, took this serious. The 3.7 is a serious matter. And although I think this was the first 3.7 that had been filed, you know, we were very careful in figuring out exactly what that meant and exactly what the council's responsibilities were. So at this point, the next step for this PDP is for council to discuss on April 26th. So that's my quick review of the report. And I'll switch back over here to, and yes, Mary, we're going to discuss this at April 26th council meeting. We will not have a decision there. WebEx is a little funny. I'm trying to look for hands. Not quite used to WebEx, but that's the basic. You know, as liaison, I can't make a decision, unilateral decision. Heather can't make a unilateral decision as the chair, and so this is as a group decision, the leadership decision. It came to this point. Like, okay, so I'm looking. It looks like Mary's saying George has his hand up. I only see Petters, but George, why don't you go first?
Yeah, George Griffith here for the record. I have some very grave concerns about this three-page document, and I've prepared some notes, some detailed notes going through almost paragraph by paragraph an analysis of the document. I figure it would probably take me about 10 minutes without interruptions to go through my analysis, and perhaps less. What I was thinking was whether anybody added any short points before that or whether I should just go with my points and then people could take notes while I talk and then go through it.
Pedro here, if I can just put in a practical question before you go on.
George here, sure.
Sure, Peter. Why don't you go ahead?
Yeah. So you're saying that the next step will be for the Genesis Council to discuss this, and I presume that this means that until then we will not have any further questions or meetings with our working group. But could there be a possibility that when you have discussed it in the council, that there are some feedback or questions or suggestions to put back to our working group to discuss, or at least to give our input on it? I feel sorry about shutting this completely down now when we have worked on this topic for so long time, even if there is this specific question that we have not reached a consensus on. But even if we're a small group and we're still people that have discussed this for a long time, and if you have any specific questions or suggestions, could be good to put it back to our working group to get our feedback on it. Thanks.
Yes. Petter, this is Susan for the record. I would definitely agree with you. This, you know, no decision will be made on April 26th. I would assume there would probably not be a working group meeting on that same day. But once we have put this to the whole council and a little bit of brainstorming, and then I would imagine that will follow on the email threads on the council list. And then, I wouldn't be surprised. I can't predict, what the rest of the council members, what ideas they might come up with or solutions, but I wouldn't be surprised if there wasn't a request to answer some questions or get feedback from the working group. So, we'll have to figure that out next week after the council meeting. It's reassuring that you would be available to, and hopefully the rest of the working group, to provide that feedback.
Thanks.
Okay, you're welcome. Okay, so it looks like we have some other hands up, but let's go with George. Let's try to keep it to 10 minutes. That's, quite a big chunk of time, and we do have others in the queue, but let's start with George.
Okay, George Krikos, for the transcript. My first point is I did send an email yesterday to the mailing list regarding the claim that there's low participation and that there's a required charter amendment for the RPM PDP. And so I'm going to rely on that email later, but it basically documented that those points are not necessarily correct. Second point is, and this isn't in the emails that everybody has, but there was an email sent to me by Heather on March the 7th, 2017. It wasn't sent to the mailing list, but Susan has it, Mary and Steve also got it. And there's no presumption of privacy on that since it's dealing with this issue. So I'll quote from the relevant sections. And this is after the call I had with Heather and after the call she had with Phil and Petter as well. And so she said, "What this process allows for is a more detailed articulation of the level of consensus after an opportunity for all views to be recorded and deliberated upon in a transparent manner." And then describing the process of what would happen after the 10-minute calls with Susan, quote, "She will then compile all input received and present it to the PDP as a revised straw man." That's emphasis there, revised straw man, "of possible articulations of the working group's recommendations. All possible conclusions will then be recorded and presented by Susan," and then here's an important part, "for the group's subsequent deliberation." So this is the March 7th email I got from Heather. So I was led to believe that we'd be deliberating on the revised straw man at this point in an open and transparent manner in line with the working group guidelines. But then this changed in Susan's March 9th email to the list. There's a subtle difference here. It says, "Following these office hour sessions," this is sent to the mailing list on March 9th, "following these office hour sessions, I will, with ICANN staff assistance, prepare a report for the working group on the discussions that took place. That report should form the basis for an initial designation of the consensus levels for each of the six options by Phil and Petter." So notice that that email on March 9th didn't anticipate any further deliberations. It said we were going to go straight to the initial designation of the consensus. And so in my mind, this change on March the 9th amounts to a de facto anonymous poll, which, you know, as per the Section 3.7 appeal documents, is not allowed. And I did privately object to Susan and Heather and copied Mary and Steve in an email of March the 14th, hoping that, you know, there's a miscommunication or something with regards to what the proper procedure. I never got a reply to that March 14th email. Anyhow, going back to the March 9th, my fourth point is the March 9th email, which had the straw man, the brief analysis of the six options section, after the six options themselves, just the brief analysis, that wasn't a very neutral analysis, and it's basically based on the document that Phil and Petter prepared in advance of the October anonymous poll that I already objected to. And in my view, that document should have been more neutral. You know, if anything is going to be sent to the council, it should be neutral and not a one-sided document. For example, option one, you know, it says things like potentially places the IGO in a worse position. That's pointed out. But the exact same analysis is applicable to option number three, but it's not stated. And option three's analysis is very misleading. And similarly, option four is criticized, but option three isn't. So that's a problem I had with the March 9th document that formed the basis of the 10-minute calls. And so my expectation was that we'd provided more neutral analysis prior to that, to those calls, prior to anything being sent to council. And now going back to now the latest April 12th document, page 1, paragraph 2, it actually says that there are 10 responses. 8 working groups responded to the invitation to meet with me, and 2 other members sent input by email. That's 8 plus 2 equals 10. I do on math.com. But if you go later on that page, there's actually only 9 responses that are documented. There's like 5 of the 9 members who responded, and then the remaining four members who provided feedback, three support option three, then one supported the nominate model. It's obviously Paul Tatterfield. So that adds up to nine, not 10. So somebody's input is missing or there's some other error in the document. Next point, point number six is page one, paragraph three. There's a key point, and precision is very important, saying that it's not about preserving the rights of a registrant to take a case to court. That's what it says in the document. That's very imprecise, though. What's the real issue is about having a right for the registrant to have a court decide the case on the merits. This is regardless of whether it's the IGO or the registrant who initiates the case. And under option one, it's where the URS or the UDRP decision gets initiated. The IGO can file a case in court to have the matter decided on the merits by the court. This is also distinguishing between simply taking a case to court, which is then summarily dismissed due to immunity for this IGO quick process, or for the lack of cause of action issue, which is somewhat related in the yoyo.email case in the UK. These are dismissals on technicalities versus a de novo case being decided in the court on the merits. Now, my next point, my seventh point, is with relation to the feedback section at the bottom of page one. It's presenting all the options as mutually exclusive of one another, which is just not the case. You know, option number six, which is the nominate model of mediation favored by Paul Tatterfield, is something I support, and I know Paul T. Tatterfield also supports option number one, even option number four. You know, so these pluralities that are declared in the document don't reflect the real matrix of views. If you solicited the either the ranked proposals, the ranked support of all the options, or just tabulated, do you support option number one? I obviously support option number one, but I also support option number four before that, saying that the proper place should be in the RPM PDP. I also support option number five, which is the stuff about keeping the domain name locked in the event of an in-rem challenge as opposed to an in-personam challenge. So these are all things that can be combined as options and solutions. And the way it's presented in this summary document, it's making everything appear as though they're mutually exclusive, which is something that is kind of working against consensus making. My next point, eighth point, is the summary for option number three, claiming that arbitration has been requested by the IGOs, is very misleading and based on an entirely false premise. The IGOs want binding arbitration as a complete replacement for the UDRP URS. And adding arbitration as an additional step after UDRP or URS and successful assertion of immunity in the court actually makes the IGOs worse off than the status quo. And so all these arguments for option number three fail to probably disclose that this quirk of process is a flaw in the UDRP URS, that it's to the detriment of the registrants. And people have obviously openly said that this thing that we're working on is something not for the IGOs, but it's for registrants. And so option number three doesn't eliminate that quirk of process, the loss of the right to have a court decide things on the merits, but instead preserves it and then tries to add a weak solution on top of things, namely arbitration, rather than actually eliminating the quirk of process, like option number one does, putting the parties back into their positions prior to the domain dispute being initiated. My next point is not in this document, but I want to just raise the issue that all this ICANN policymaking was supposed to be, quote, without prejudice. And when I'm defining without prejudice, I mean without detriment to any existing right or claim. We're, even in our own document, we said ICANN doesn't have the right to create, ICANN shouldn't be creating new rights for anybody or causing, rights of other people to be trampled upon. And so that was kind of the bargain that was made when the UDRP was adopted and presumably the URS as well. And so from the quirks we've discovered, though, this idea that these policies are being created without that detriment turns out to be wrong, as we know from this IgO immunity issue, quirk, and the cause of action issue exposed in the UK in the yoyo.email lawsuit. So we need to fix those policies rather than just add additional complex layers that preserve the bugs and try to, you know, add weak facsimiles of court, like arbitration, to attempt to replace the court with an inferior procedure. Now, if you go to the top of the page 2, this has suggested topics for further deliberation, and I think that we should deliberate them. Like, the first one is very simple. If the thing isn't in scope, then option 4 is the only solution. And so if we had that deliberation, I'm pretty sure that option 4 would win over the remaining people that don't support option 4, because that's clearly a scope issue. And if we actually do have the scope, then some of the criticisms of the other options, like option 6, which Paul T supports, people are saying that's out of scope, that it's too broad and it's better to be handled in the RPM PDP. So you can't have it both ways. You have to, you know, pick one. Either it's in scope or it's not in scope. So if some things are in scope and other things aren't in scope, you know, that could be debated productively, I think, by the working group. And that could possibly lead to a consensus. So I think we should have done these things, or we should do these things. And that was kind of what we were promised, what I was promised by Heather, that we'd be deliberating these things further. The second option on that table, which is the IGOs being able to bring a GDRP, yeah, that's all possible now. We've talked about that in our report, so we can either expand on that, you know, have like an independent objector for UGCLDs. We can give standing to national governments to file actions on behalf of IGOs. You know, if they're in the same jurisdiction as a registrant, they obviously can't claim immunity if they're the government of that country. My next point, the 11th point, is this claim about the dominance in the current discussions by, quote, a few members who largely belong to one specific set of industry interests, which basically parrots the claims that were made by Phil and Petter in their response to my Section 3.7 appeal. I've already refuted that in my reply to their response document. And so here, a one-sided representation of that claim is being made anonymously, you know, because these were, quote, anonymous inputs, but we know who made them. But note that in particular that they don't identify these members. You know, who is this group of members? And it ignores the fact that the expected standards of behavior will require us to set aside our personal interests. So it's essentially claiming that this unnamed group is violating the rules, but it's not allowing them to defend themselves or have that decided by an appropriate ICANN authority whether they're breaking the expected standards of behavior. So I consider this a very cowardly attack, and it's made anonymously in the report, and I reject that attack. Furthermore, if what they claim is actually true, that there's been capture of the working group, this doesn't just affect this recommendation that we've wasted a year on. This actually affects all of the PDP's recommendations, because how can you claim that this capture on just one recommendation when, you know, essentially it means that the entire working group has been captured? So which one is it? You know, are all the working groups' recommendations going to be, you know, knocked out because we can't form a consensus because of capture? That's like a very serious concern of mine, that, you know, people are using that claim of capture only for this one recommendation and not looking at the other three recommendations, because we have four recommendations. This is recommendation number 3 that we've been debating with regards to this quirker process. So the page 2 proposal section that is highlighted under the proposed section of the document, I think this current report needs to be severely amended, or in the alternative, there should be an opportunity for a reply document to also be sent to council, so that council has the benefit of alternate views, because I have severe reservations about this document, which I've already talked about in the last 11 points. So I don't think that those views should necessarily be filtered by the liaison. It should be presenting those alternate views directly. Furthermore, the proposal, in my view, is essentially violating the working group guidelines, because where is the consensus call as required by the rules? I.e., the first line of the proposal says, differentiating those in which consensus was reached from those presented in the form of options in which consensus has not been reached. Who's deciding whether the consensus has been reached or not? I.e., that's basically a consensus call. And there hasn't been a consensus call because this Section 3.7 appeal stopped that. And all the anonymous feedback on the straw man proposal cannot be considered to be the basis for the determination, because the working group guidelines themselves say, you can't have the anonymous input. So basically that those numbers on the first page are amounting to a de facto anonymous vote, which is expressly disallowed by the rules. So it was supposed to be used as a basis for those 10-minute calls were supposed to be, in my mind, and from what I was being told, was it's the basis for further open and transparent deliberations, which is in keeping with the rules. And then a consensus call.
So, George, I'm going to give you one more minute to wrap it up, okay?
Yeah, I'm near the end.
You've gone over your 10. Okay,
sorry.
Good. Thanks.
And then a consensus call would be based on those open and transparent deliberations. Thus, I'm very concerned about the rules not being followed here. Furthermore, even for the other recommendations, there's not been a consensus call. So, like recommendations 1, 2, and 4. I'm opposed to having ICANN pay for the EDRP URSVs for IGOs, and I know others have expressed the same. There's not been enough debate to see the views of others transparently on that. So if Susan intends to brief Council on April 26th, there should be a minority brief allowing for other views to be shared. Remember, my Section 3.7 appeal never got to the GNSO Council. They never got to see my request for a replacement chair, request that the first anonymous poll be declared null and void, et cetera, and the detailed basis for those requests. Next one is, with regard to the draft report prepared by ICANN staff for a May GNSO Council meeting, that should be a report that the working group itself approves, not just staff, and it currently seems to be amounting to de facto final report based for the entire working group based on an anonymous poll, i.e. the anonymous feedback to Susan, rather than an open and transparent process required by the working group guidelines. In particular, a minority report should be expressly permitted. So if anything goes to council, it needs to wait, in preparation for a minority report that could be submitted at the same time, or even multiple minority reports that respond to the deficiencies in the process and the lack of documented consensus levels. Bottom of page 2, as noted, it takes things out of the PDP's hand by making a conclusion that there will be no consensus without actually preparing that revised straw man proposal and seeing what happens. Furthermore, the goalposts keep moving. We see that option 3 is losing support and option 4 is gaining momentum as a top choice, but we're not being told what the standard is to qualify as clear consensus. Option 4 obviously has a majority. So, just because Phil and Petter don't support support only option 3 and refuse to budge from that, that actually reinforces the call for the removal of co-chairs so that a more neutral chair or facilitator can actually attempt to reach consensus through open and transparent deliberations amongst the remaining members of us who are open to other alternatives. I've already addressed the low participation and once again, the small number of participants affects the entire report. And last point, I want to go to that last paragraph that shows how clearly there's bias in the creation of this document. Look at how option 4 is presented. Rather than calling it option 4, it's called the option preferred by those members opposed to an arbitration option. That really shows the perspective of the document's creation is non-neutral. It's saying someone who supports option 3, whatever label supports option 4 like that. So it's like saying Pepsi drinkers as the drink preferred by those who don't drink Coca-Cola, or saying that one is from the anti-abortion faction rather than the pro-life faction. So look at how that was really phrased. Anyway, my last point is the point claim that a charter amendment is required in the RPM PDP is incorrect. I discussed that by email. And that's it. Thanks.
Thanks, George. That was quite lengthy. but I can understand you're passionate about this document and this issue. I can't address everything right now because we need to make sure we get the other participants their time to speak. But a couple of things. You're right. How we started out with this process evolved somewhat, not radically, but we did. It definitely evolved as we learned and we spoke with people. So that is true. We'll check on the number of people that provided input and correct that in the report. And I do not see this as an attack on anyone. We took a fresh look at a hard problem, a difficult PDP, and Heather made some decisions based on what's best for the GNSO, and nothing has made, there's not been an anonymous poll, there's not been a consensus of those issues. We're simply, after the 3.7 was filed, following what we believe is the best process and taking it to the full GNSO Council. So the next person I have in my list, I think, is Jay Chapman. So Jay, would you like to go ahead?
Thanks, Susan. This is Jay Chapman. I mostly just have some questions. So, Susan, could you expand just a little bit more on where, you know, at what point you decided that, you know, this was, you know, necessary to take to the GNSO as opposed to just calling for a consensus call? I mean, from my perspective, we have. I don't know that it's even consensus. I think we pretty much have, you know, just a straight vote on everything that's going on here in the in this working group, short of this one small issue. And so I guess I'm just wondering what the basis was to take the whole baby to the GNSO as opposed to just this one specific, you know, as opposed to this one specific matter. With regard to, you know, all the options that we're considering around an appeal, and as opposed to that, just go straight to a consensus call, and it seems to me that it's perfectly okay that we get to a point where, you know, we don't have consensus, but we do have some, you know, we do have results, and we can share those. And just move, you know, everything else is you know, is set on this one particular, you know, sub-matter of, you know, of a sub-point, you know, we have some disagreement. Here's how that lies out. I'm just curious, can you describe more why, you know, what the reasoning was? Maybe get a little deeper into that beyond the report as to, you know, what the basis, you know, I mean, just some of those facts. I'm just kind of curious. Thank you.
Thank you, Jay, and that's a good question. For the most part, as we heard from members, and really, you know, and working through that straw man document, it definitely came to mind that it would be very difficult to move forward in, you know, would more deliberations and more work by the working group really result in a different have a different result at the end of the day than what the status is right now. You know, we're trying to, you know, this is a difficult matter. The IGOs did not participate. And actually the registries who are calling for the domain names to be released are not participating either. So, even though, you know, a lot of good people from different parts of the community spent a lot of time and hard work on this, which is really appreciated by the council, there was definitely areas that were not represented, and by their own choice, you know, you have to show up sometimes. But we, the council is in a hard spot here because of, you know, there's GAC advice, the board, and none of these six options would really satisfy the IGOs. And so it seems to me that we can take, I don't see taking this to the council as a matter of not providing a full assessment of what has gone on and all of the work that you did agree upon, but by if it could be the GNSO Council will come to an option here or decision or recommendation, I guess is the best way to put it, that, you know, Heather and I hadn't thought of. But we just felt like once the 3.7 was filed, that put this PDP on a different status, and we wanted to look to our colleagues for their, you know, sort of out-of-the-box thinking. And so, you know, after we had done additional homework to find out what was going on, it just makes sense that it would go to the full GNSO Council so that all the communities can weigh in. This does not discount the other recommendations, and you know, Mary could correct me if I'm wrong. I still see a report coming out of the working group on the other issues that you've have agreed upon, and you know, finish the work on that. And you know, it could be that we just say these are the options. These were not agreed upon, and you know, if we don't figure out a different mechanism here, then this may to send this all back to the working group and to keep going round and round and round about it may not be the best solution either. So Heather was trying to think out of the box and come to a resolution that worked for the whole GNSO Council. And I think the next person I have is Zach. I have Zach and Phil after. So, Zach, would you like to speak?
Right. Oh, thank you. I just had a little delay in unmuting myself. First of all, thank you, Susan, for putting together the report, and thank you for holding those office hours as well in San Juan. It's not often that someone listens to me graciously while I speak for 10 minutes and sharing my views, so I appreciate that. In terms of the exercise of consensus building, it seems to me that the policy development process expressly contemplates that not every working group will come to a clear consensus, and there's various levels of consensus. And the absence of a clear consensus is sometimes a very important report to the council, because it highlights the different firmly held viewpoints and various options. And so it seems to me that there's still opportunity for this working group to reach consensus, even unanimous consensus, that the options at least should be provided to the council, and preferably by way of a consensus call. So, for example, in terms of option 3 versus option 4 versus other options, I'd be perfectly satisfied for the option that I propose to be the minority view if that turned out to be the case following the consensus call. Likewise, I'd be equally pleased if it was the majority view or a tertiary view. But I think that the working group can probably agree that there should be a consensus call. There's no reason for not to be. And the appeal was solely on the procedure for reaching a consensus. Secondly, another thing that I imagine the working group can reach consensus on, and in fact, clear consensus is that nobody apparently agrees with what the IGOs have requested or the GAC advice. That's another aspect that there's clear consensus on, in my view. And so between those two potential clear consensuses, I think that there's a report that this working group can prepare without having to seek the kind of interim guidance from council about how to proceed. There's a clear way to proceed. Thank you.
Sorry, I was having trouble getting off mute there. Sorry about that. You know, those are very good points, and we're definitely, a report will need to be done. But, you know, just one of the reasons we came to this sort of solution was that the cross-community working group on the use of country and territory needs sort of came to the same standstill. And a report from this working group could be modeled on what they did, and I don't have that in front of me, so I can't give you details on that. But and literally, we don't have the time. But I don't think what we're proposing in going to the GNSO Council rules out all that work and all the other consensus that you know recommendations that you came to in the working group. And it could be that, you know, once the GNSO Council talks about, discusses this in depth, you know, and I would not expect, you know, an answer out of the April 26th meeting, is, you know, then we'll come back to the working group again after that. But what we're trying to do, and, you know, and George was sort of alluded to that we may not be doing this, is trying to make sure that all voices in the community are heard, all are represented. And that's what, you know, the GNSO Council, you know, there's, you know, contracted parties and non-contracted and, you know, constituencies with the stakeholder groups and constituencies within that. So everybody has a home. And so, you know, for it, it just seems that as we took a look at this, Heather and I, that, you know, you'd been stuck for 9 months on basically the same issue, and we really are trying not to hinder, but to assist in wrapping up this working group and with a good solution and recommendations out of it. So I think the next person is Phil. Please go ahead, Phil. And then I have
Heather. Yes, thank you, Susan. Can you hear me okay?
I can.
Oh, good, good. I'll make this short. First, I wanted to thank you, Susan, and, of course, Heather as well, and support staff who have provided excellent support throughout this entire working group process. And in particular, thank you, Susan, for the very hard work that's reflected in this report and the time you spent engaging with members of the working group. I do personally, in an individual capacity, agree with the recommendation in your report and the observations and conclusions that support it. I wanted to speak briefly to the last point where you note in the report that referring the matter, that is the matter of IGO access to curative rights process, to the RPM review working group, of which I'm also a co-chair. I just wanted to say a few things on that from members of this working group who also participate there and support that avenue. Number one, personal view, I would think it would be premature to try to initiate a charter revision process to address that point for the RPM working group until the council has acted with some finality on this report, which, based on what you said, would be at its May meeting. Depending on what happens then, if there's still a desire to seek a charter change, members have seen how the co-chairs have handled a current request for a charter change, where the person, the RPM working group member who made that point, was asked to prepare a report to the working group justifying that position that working group members could consider. We then encouraged working group discussion, pro or con, on that proposal to gauge the level of interest and support. And now that there's been some substantial support as well as some opposition to that particular proposal, which is to move all or some of the URS considerations to phase two of the work, we're going to schedule a working group call. So as a process matter, I would anticipate that the process would be exactly the same. The last thing I wanted to say on that is that I can't speak for the members with that point of view to the extent it's based on the adequacy of the current appeal process from both the URS and UDRP. No charter change is required to address the adequacy of the appeals process. There's already, I reviewed the charter recently once again, and there is a specific charter question relating to the appeal process. But if there is support for going beyond that and directing the RPM working group to specifically address IGO access to URS and UDRP, that would take a charter change, and we would probably follow the process that I just described. So I'll leave it at that, and thank you again, Susan, and thanks, of course, to staff for their steadfast work throughout this process. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Bill, and just thank you for thanking me. I appreciate that. This is my role as a counselor, and I, you know, take that responsibility very strong, and so I was happy to try to participate in a positive way in this. So let me see, Petter, you're next on the list, and then we've only got about 6 minutes left after that, so I have a couple suggestions.
Thanks, Petter here, and I just want to make a quick, so to speak, personal summary. First of all, I hope that even if we only make the informal conclusions on the other topics, I hope they will be taken into consideration also, because we made those conclusions in a very early stage, and it was I don't remember that we had anyone that voted against our finalization of that. Then just a quick note, I tend to agree with SAC, because before the 3.7, we indeed had a time schedule to first have a poll in order to get the six options, hopefully see if we could cut them down to three or even two, as we had from the start, and then discuss those remaining more limited number of options and have a final vote. So we could in fact have without this break on work, we could have by this date have come out with our final report to the GNSL Council. But the thing is that as they are, and I'll leave it over to you to decide, and said take into consideration what we have already done, and also the different kind of options to see what fits best to solve the original problem we had for our working group in the original topic. Thanks.
Okay, thank you very much, Petter. And I do think that the other recommendations that you all agreed upon is that, you know, part of the hard work you did, and we want to make sure that that is noted. So we will not forget those. Just as a wrap-up, so once again, we're going to take this to the whole GNSO Council, you know, and we will see what the, where that discussion ends up, you know, with hopefully some sort of resolution in May. But, and definitely to George, you know, you, I took quite a few notes as you were talking, and I did, I've been on business travel and actually review team, so I'm in Europe right now instead of in California, and so I did not have the time to really, I glanced over your emails, but I will read those thoroughly. If any, if you have other topics or concerns, any of you have concerns about this process, you are more than free to send me your emails and I will read those so that I understand everybody's perspective, though I think we've already gotten that, and to start our discussion with the council next week. And I know that as the liaison, I have a very important role that to make sure that I am representing the viewpoints of all of the working group. So, and I take that seriously. So, like I said, if you want to send me emails, I will promise to read them. May not respond to you on those, but I will read them and take them into consideration. Anything else? And, of course, I will have to consult with Heather on all of this. But as soon as we, you know, I would urge you to all to listen in to the council call next week, and then you'll have a sense of where the discussion is going, and as soon as we have something to report back to you, once the discussions through the call and, you know, the council meeting and the email threads, then we'll get back to the full working group. And George, is that a new hand?
George, yeah, I've been waiting for the last 15 minutes. may I speak?
Yes.
Yeah, first, small point, you said there was no representative from the registries. That's not correct, because both Phil Corbin and David Maher are from the registry constituency. But basically, if you want to guarantee that there's...
You know what? You're absolutely right, and I apologize for that.
Thanks. George again. If you want to guarantee that there's no consensus, the way to do that is to stop talking, and that's what... seems to be happening. You know, the you're proposing that we have no further deliberations, which is counter to what I was being told in March. So this process seems to be, to me, to be entirely hijacked now. That, you know, I disagree with the premise of many of the statements in the 3-page document that was sent out as a summary report, and it doesn't appear that that's going to be amended before it goes to council. You know, I'd like the opportunity to address council myself if it's not going to be addressed. In the alternative, you know, there should be an amended version of this document that actually reflects today's call and any further input from people. And also, the same goes for the draft report that, you know, that would be sent in May. It seems, you know, we're stopping the process without allowing people the opportunity to reach a consensus, which is counter to what this was all about. This was about trying to do the consensus building. Heather and you have, you know, made this conclusion, which is based on, I think, faulty analysis, because the options were presented as mutually exclusive. We know for a fact that option 4 has the support of at least 6 of the 10 people. How hard it would it be to get the other 2 via some, you know, additional discussions? To me, that seems entirely feasible. And we should, you know, be exploring that. It doesn't hurt to hold meetings. And so I don't know why we're not being allowed to have that opportunity to form the consensus. It just doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever.
And thank you, George. I've definitely noted all those comments, and we'll look it over your email. Unfortunately, we are now out of time.
Yeah,
we're 2 minutes over the meeting. What was that?
I'd like the opportunity to talk to Heather as well. Like, my Section 3 appeal was never really finalized, so you've had multiple calls with Phil and Petter. I haven't had the opportunity except for that one call.
I will note that, and I'm not sure on process whether that's possible or not, but, you know, Heather is easy to get a hold of, too. So, okay, I thank everybody for, you know, hanging in there with this difficult situation, and hopefully GNSO Council will come to, in all our discussions and evaluations, you know, a solution that is reasonable to all in the working group. That's what we're aiming at. So thank you very much, and have a good evening or day or whatever it is for you. Goodbye.